From the bayous in Louisiana to the timber country up north, you'll find them out on the trap line chasing furs to put up on the board. Mixing up another batch of that magical stuff, chilling around the fire after the show. Hey, it's Sarah and Jeff, and maybe a guest on the Trappin' Radio.
Hello, this is Clint Locklear with Trappin' Radio. How the hell are you and where have you been? Is my question. I've got two people that I'm going to interview today that if you don't know who they are and you're in the trapping industry, you're obviously dead. So I've got Jeff Dunlap and Sarah Sweetness Gomez. That's the new pet name, apparently, that I just heard. So we're going to talk about a few things. Can you read the question that you just read me a minute ago?
Yeah. All right. It says, hey, I have always dyed and waxed my traps, but after listening to a couple of your podcasts, I'm interested in trying Full Metal Jacket. I was wondering if you had any advice on what I need to do to prep some of my traps to switch them over to FMJ. Also, if you have any general instructions about using FMJ, it would be much appreciated.
Is that the whole question?
Yeah, there was another question in here. Oh, I also wanted to ask, when using FMJ, do you guys switch out the traps after a catch due to the coating coming off?
Okay. Do y'all use FMJ?
On dog proofs.
Dog proofs you do. Okay. So my advice, man, is if you've got, what I would do with traps that you've been dyeing and waxing is to boil them in trap dye, let them dry, and then get a couple of gallons of Full Metal Jacket, put it in a bucket, dip it just for a few seconds, pull it out, set it to the side after about 10, 15 minutes, re-dip it. First time, two or three times, and you're going to have a coating on there. Now, there's a few things that you can do before that. I highly recommend you spray paint the trap. You don't have to, but it does seem to last a lot longer. I don't dye the trap. Like, I'm not trying to dye the trap and then trying to use Full Metal Jacket as wax, really. But that's a way to get a lot of the rust and stuff off. So that's the way that I normally did it. You can pressure wash them, just get a clean, the trap as clean as you can, and then dip them two or three times the first time. And for goodness sake, don't pull the trap after you catch an animal. This is not wax. It's not going to come off like that. The smell is not going to bother anything. It's not going to deter your catch at all. So don't use all that energy to move that trap and then set another one. I've taken all kind of traps from one state to the next and never had any issues, so that doesn't make any difference. The only thing that may make a difference, if you catch a skunk and he sprays directly on it, you just don't want to deal with it personally, but I don't even know if that would hurt anything. So the other part of that question was?
I think you answered it about switching traps out after
okay.
catch.
Yeah, it's pretty simple stuff. I mean, you just dip the trap and let it dry. It's not a gas base. It's pretty much odorless when it dries. It's very hard. Very rarely are you going to have to re-dip the trap between seasons unless you're just running and catching every day and you're in somewhere that's got acidic soil or something that can eat the trap. So just don't complicate it. Just dip it and run. Good enough answer, Sweetness?
That sounds good.
So I want to talk to y'all about Texas, since y'all seem to be the new Texas people.
So much fun.
What did you like about Texas?
There's lots of things. But you know, I've never been on a property that big in my life. So to see, you know, the property that big was amazing of itself.
And how big was it?
I think it was, the main part was 50,000 acres. And then there was a back part was 20 or 30,000 acres.
Yeah,
on the back
70
part.
Altogether, yeah.
Yeah. And then inside that was a 30,000 pen, acre pen. So much fence. But yeah, I mean, obviously it was a new challenge and I was like that aspect of it.
What was a challenge besides just the size? Texas has challenges all to itself.
Yeah. I mean, initially, you know, we're going after coyotes and in my mind where I've trapped coyotes before, I'm looking for an intersection and then I get on there and there's hundreds of intersections.
Yes.
So I was like, which one do you pick? you could never set all of them. So how do you pick which intersections that you're, so, you know, finding something that stood out versus just an intersection.
But if I have my directions right on that ranch, so when you leave where all the mobile homes are, where you stay, or the skin and shed, you go west, it's like an hour and 15 minutes mm-hmm. of flying before you hit the other side of the property.
Oh, yeah, easily.
Easily. Yeah, I mean, you do. When you say hundreds of intersections, mm-hmm. it is hundreds mm-hmm. of intersections. Mm-hmm. So what were y'all focused on then?
I think for the first week, we were just trying to get our bearings, like, so we're not backtracking. And we were just started setting. I mean, we were just so excited. We just started setting. And then it's like, wait a minute. Now we're backtracking. We have to have some sort of direction on all this. But what did we look for? Fresh sign we looked for. If there was something, you know, that stuck out. You know, if there was... I don't know,
what
where
do you
the
mean by
road
stuck
curved
out?
A little bit, or there was grass in the road, or the road, you know, wasn't just a straight shot. Some sort of feature that stuck out, like a water drainage ditch. I don't know. We were just trying to set a little bit of everything to see what stuck.
We're still talking hundreds, though.
I know.
How did y'all narrow the hundreds down to what realistically amount of traps did y'all run?
What was our goal? I wanted to get.
Did y'all ever get over 100 out?
Did we get over 100?
Yeah, we had like 121 out.
Yeah, because I wanted to set all the traps we had in the truck.
That's not counting, you know, snares in the fence.
Mm-hmm. Now, was Albert running all the fence?
No, he was originally. Then we took over part of it, like, by the airport and all
okay.
that. We did all that.
And who got to set up the deer pen? Because that's where most of the cats were that I caught there.
Nobody. They didn't want anybody doing the deer pen.
You're kidding me.
No. No, they had becoming. That's where I seen the most cat tracks was by the deer pen. I could see the little ones up there. And they said, they called Albert and told him, they said, you guys, they got their traps too close. You couldn't hardly even see the deer pen when they wanted to pull. So
were they afraid it was going to spook the deer?
I'm not sure.
Well, the owner or one of not the owner but one of the upper guys,
the corporation people.
Yeah, would come and they had a dog and he would be around the pens with
That's
his dog
right.
So he didn't want his dog getting caught.
He didn't want a dog getting caught. So there was still lots of property, so but there was a lot of cat tracks around them.
That is a shame.
Yeah. So.
But I caught my gray fox
right around the corner,
real close there. that was probably my favorite moment.
Aren't they tiny down there?
They're so tiny, but I'd never even seen a gray fox before, ever. You know,
really?
I never caught one. I never, you know, other than seeing one mounted somewhere. But that was my first experience with a gray fox.
Crawl under on it with a snare.
Don't y'all have those in Michigan?
Nah, we got some, but not very many.
Hmm. You need to go. You're going to New York, correct?
Mm-hmm.
They got grays out there, nice ones too.
You're gonna flip out when you see a New York gray fox.
I just saw a picture of one. Yeah,
compared to a Texas gray fox.
No. Yeah, that was definitely a highlight.
So what stuck out to you trapping in Texas down there, Jeff?
Mostly, you know, just, you know, like Albert had went in there a couple weeks before us, and, you know, how spooky them coyotes would get on the inside of that fence, you know, once they realize something, they don't know what's going on, probably, they're just, they're, you know, seeing dead coyotes in the fence, or there's just disturbances, but just how spooky the inside of that fence them coyotes will get so quickly.
And what were you focusing on trying to locate coyotes?
Mostly fresh, you know, scat in the road. You know, we had one spot that we thought was going to be awesome where there's like six roads all come together. And we thought, you know, how could you not catch coyotes there? And we didn't end up catching one there. Mm-hmm. You know, we got dug out one time and that was it.
I used to have an older gentleman that trapped with me all the time, and he trapped a little bit. And when we would see something like that, he'd go, Ray Charles could catch a set here. I'd catch a coyote here. We never caught shit when he said that. No. Ever did we catch anything when he said that.
No, we had it loaded up. What did we have, like six traps in that spot?
I think we, by the time it was said and done, we had almost a dozen there.
We wouldn't catch something, we'd add more traps. We didn't catch something, we'd add more traps. You know how it's supposed to go.
So what was the ground like down there? What difference? Because I know it was different than Michigan.
Real hard, you know. It wasn't all lava like ground like the last place I was at down there. Sarah ran into some of that where you go to pull it out and it comes out in chunks like it's lava.
It's very acidic.
Yeah. And we had problems with hogs rooting around, knocking our traps out of the bed.
I would say that was one of the most frustrating things was the hogs would just, there'd be no hog sign there and you'd set and they just root it right up. And we have it on trail camera. They just walk by, root up the trap, and then go. And then they do all of them in the area. So it's like we didn't even get a chance.
For miles and miles.
Oh, my word.
They just walk right down the road.
So I didn't have that problem there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But definitely some beautiful country to trap in. And, you know, and then we, you know, kind of start focusing on raccoons a lot more. And
why did you do that?
Because they were paying, you know, bounty on them. So, and they, plus they wanted them gone. They were concerned about the raccoons, so.
Yeah, because a lot of the feeders that they have set up, they've got solar something with the, you know, solar wires, whatever they're doing at that feeder, and the raccoon were destroying all the solar wires and the paneling, and then they were pooping in the cotton. I don't know, you're from the South. It's cotton in a bunk. Cotton mill or cotton seed or something that they're feeding.
The high protein feed, yeah.
Yeah, so they're pooping in the troughs and, you know, obviously eating all the feed. So that really made them happy when we caught raccoons. And they,
because they can get people to come down there and want to chase coyotes and, you know, from the up north and chase bobcats especially. But, you know, to get them to somebody come down and actually focus on killing raccoons. And,
I think that's the biggest business opportunity in Texas.
Yeah.
It's coons.
Yeah.
It always has been.
But they're nice looking raccoon. They look like an Iowa raccoon without the under fur.
All that feed.
Yeah.
They're,
it depends
good.
On the type feed they're given. Were they yellowish when you skin them? The fat?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of freaky.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird.
So were you DPing them or footholding them or what were you doing?
DPs.
DPs mostly. Mainly. Right by the feeders.
Did you hook to the feeders or just next to them?
I think we were putting disposables down.
Yeah, we did some of that. We used some rebar.
Yeah, rebar mostly.
Rebar stakes.
Just pounding the, you know, like an 18-inch rebar. That held them in that ground pretty good.
So what type of vehicle were y'all using down there?
Side by side. With air conditioning and flat tires.
Damn, dude, air conditioning.
Yeah, you know, and flat tires.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of thorns down there.
Mm-hmm.
I think we put, but the trapping trip before, we were in Arkansas for a couple weeks, and then we were in Texas for a couple weeks, And we put 1,100 miles on the side-by-side in a month.
How many miles do you think you were doing? See, I've never figured out what 70,000 miles of fence is like. But I know 20,000 acres is 77 miles, because we figured that up one time.
I can't remember.
I know just that one backside was like 8 miles down through there. Mm-hmm. The backside when we went in. But it's always exciting. You're running them snares because you'll go there and there'll be one knocked down and then you get out and fix it. And there'll be another one knocked down and you'll fix it. And you'll not have, there's one knocked down, there's a cat track, you know, where you come through. And then, so, you know, then you get up there and there's a cat. There's mm-hmm. another cat. There's a coyote, you know, and there's a badger, you know. So, I mean, it's always exciting. You never know when, you know, when you're going down through there and you see them orange flags and you get up there, you never know what you're going to have.
No, you definitely don't.
And
sometimes you can look and see the eagles or the vultures or whatever, and if they're flying around up there,
you know you got something.
It's a pretty good chance you got something. It's a tough country to live down there.
Mm-hmm.
There's always, you know, fire ants are going to eat you, or the eagles are going to eat you, or the snakes. Oh, my gosh, there's snakes down there.
Did y'all ever have the fire ants get on y'all?
I got bit by a couple of them down there, but that was
I had a friend of mine from Tennessee went with me, not that part of Texas. It was way farther north of there. And we were trapping. And I'm making a cat set, and all of a sudden, the fire part of the fire ants kicked in. And in my back, my boots were in the bed, but I didn't know it. And it was like they went up my leg, and they all went attack all at one time. So I jumped, I stood up. I mean, they were just all from knees down, and they were all up under my blue jeans and everything, and I just stripped. And there my poor friend was, because I don't wear underwear. This big 340-pound dude, butt-ass naked basically at this point, trying to get these fire ants off of him. He goes, I think I'm run for life. So what about the thorns? How much cactus did y'all get in y'all?
Jeff, are you still pulling thorns out?
I still got thorns in my hands.
What about you?
I know, I did good. I did pretty good.
Do you wear gloves?
Yep. But they weren't leather gloves like I'll have this year.
We were so unprepared. I mean, yeah, we knew we were going.
Yeah. We were,
and, you know, I hadn't been down there. And then
we had guns and traps and bullets. So we were prepared, just not fully prepared.
Yeah, we were.
That's a different world.
Uh-huh. It was a different world. And we were trying to pack for Arkansas before that, which is a different country.
It's hard to pack for two trips. You're going to be there for 2 or 3 weeks in each place.
You know, because we were focused on beaver in Arkansas, and then Texas has no beaver.
Mm-hmm.
So we had so much deer, it was, and so much stuff to pack, and we were going to be gone for, you know, 6 weeks, and we'll be way better prepared next time. So I take a really big poster board, and I break it out into categories, like everything we need for skinning, everything we need for you know, dry land trapping, and then there's a trap section, an anchor section, and it, you know, it's all like, and I pull out this poster board before the trip, and I just add to it, you know, I make a list on my phone, what did I forget,
and then so I come back. So it's like a redneck spreadsheet.
Yes, that we can see very big, but that's been really helpful, hasn't it, Jeff?
Yeah,
we pull out the poster board when we're getting ready to leave, you know, and, you know, so you can remember the things.
A list helps me a lot.
So my question is, did y'all carry too much stuff? Not counting the beaver stuff.
No, I would say.
No, I think we did really good, yeah, because we had learned. Jeff went to Louisiana our first trip, and he brought like 300 330s.
Of course. That's what I did.
We can't check that many. No, that we didn't even touch a fraction of them.
No.
So we narrowed it way down.
So how many footholds did y'all take down there?
We had right around, probably 150, to between 150 and 200, I'd say.
That's a good number, yeah. And y'all using mostly disposables?
Yeah, mostly disposables. A little bit of drags. We borrowed the drags from Albert. but we'll take some saber tooths down there this year.
So I'm guessing you snared the fence when you were there. Mm-hmm. What was your snaring setup?
I'm assuming it's going to be similar to what Albert's doing, but had these little bitty short snare supports that I could just push in the ground. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times I would put I just had a system. So when I'm going down, I'd always be where the fence is on the driver's side. And then when I would see the hole or the crawl under, I would get out and I would automatically grab a snare and a snare support, which already had a clip. So I'd clip the snare to the fence. I would push in the snare support, judge the size of the loop, open the loop, and then step backwards about 4 feet and hang the flag. So I would see the flag in the truck, and then I would know to start looking down on a 45-degree angle.
Sure.
Because if the flag's over the thing, I've always been worried that the coyotes are going to start avoiding that. And if you're not paying attention, because if you have brush and stuff, you don't see the flag, sure. And then you got to back up. So always put it in front of it.
So when you hung your snare, how close to the fence were you? Did you put it real tight to the fence? Did you come back an inch or two or six? Or what was the gap there?
It depended on, I'd stay as close as I could unless the lock was going to click on one of the pieces on that high tensile fence. You follow what I'm mm-hmm. saying, how those little curlicue things mm-hmm. are? So that bottom rung was usually, if it was enough to put the loop completely under, it would just be under. If the hole wasn't that big, sometimes I'd have half the loop above it. But I'd always want it to be at least an inch and a half off the ground. Because if not, you start getting more knockdowns because of the feet problem. Because the coyote, when they go, if you've ever seen them go through that fence, a lot of times they stick their front foot in there and they kind of do this sideways roll thing. If it's small, if it's bigger, they just duck, kind of like what you think about. Mm-hmm. So it really depended, but I stayed pretty close to the fence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's what frustrated me was, why are they getting knocked down? Mm-hmm. What is happening during the knockdown?
If it's a little bitty hole, they don't duck under like a dog going through a pet door. They don't do that. They actually get on their side and kind of do this half roll thing. And I think in Texas, those coyotes from generational have had such crappy snaring thrown at them that they've learned if they see something that's odd, they hit it with their foot. That's when we started going more to using, and it depends on the year that you go down there, because it won't look the same next year, I promise you. It depends on rain.
Yeah.
If there's more vegetation, then we will move vegetation to break the outline.
I was going to ask, did you bring in any blocking?
All the time. All the time.
Blocked it right down.
And that makes a big difference. Because the local guys, they're. I mean, did y'all ever see any of their snares down there?
No, we've seen one of their traps.
Oh, like a foothold trap?
No, a body grip trap.
Body grip trap. The way they snare is the snare's usually upside down, and they bobby pin it to the fence in three different places, which is the most illogical thing I've ever seen in my life. And because they didn't want to deal with knockdowns. And I think over time those coyotes have figured out, because those are so stable that they could eventually knock them. Mm-hmm. And then when they come up to a modern snare, they try to do the same thing. But if they're loaded and they're fast and they're everything they should be, mm-hmm. all they've got to do is tap it and it'll fire.
Sure.
That's the place that we started playing with the 220s in the fence.
Mm-hmm. We did a little bit of that.
We caught cats in the 280s and stuff, but never caught a coyote one, I don't believe that we
caught several coyotes.
Yeah.
But then you realize all the other part that's knocking that down is roadrunners and all kind of weird looking rodent things and don't even know what they were. So, I mean, it was... Well,
the only trap we've seen, I ever told you about that, with the bobcat and the 280...
Mm-mm.
We stopped and the snare was knocked down. I jumped out because Sarah's driving, so we always had the pass. Instead of, like you said, usually run with the driver door against the fence, mm-hmm. we'd run the other way, you know, so the passenger could just jump out real quick.
Okay.
So Sarah pulls up there, snare's knocked down, I jump out, like something caught my eye.
Well, you said, we missed a cat, and we're like, gosh darn it.
There was a cat track right in it, you know, he knocked mm-hmm. it down. And then I looked, something caught my eye, and I looked, and there's a cat over there. And I'm like,
you said, sir, there's a cat.
There's a cat, get the
it's
gun.
Still
get
here.
The gun, get the gun. Because it was between the two fences.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still on their property. Anyway, so we open up on them. I opened up with them with the purple pistol. And she gets the rifle out and opens up, and he went to crawl up on a brush pile and shot him down. And so she goes over the fence.
I'm like a illegal, I climbed the fence in big fence.
She did, too.
She here I go.
No. So she gets over there, and I was like, something. I'm like, I told her, I said, it looked like something was on that cat, and she gets over there and she goes, you're right. She picked it up and it was a 280 on that cat.
It broke the chain?
We don't know where it came from. It was from some other ranch somewhere, but it wasn't caught where, you know, like if the cat was standing there looking at you, like the springs would be left or right. Mm-hmm. It would go up and down.
Mm.
If the cat was standing on his four legs, the trap would go up and down. And he had went all the way through where he had it on his chest and his neck.
Mm.
So I'm not sure.
So y'all did that cat a favor.
Oh, well, we didn't.
For sure.
He had it on him a while, but hey, you know what? It got counted in the
cat pile. Yeah.
So what did you think about all the spots and the light white bellies and?
Well,
I loved all of them, and I said, told Jeff, I said, I want to keep all of these. And Albert, he says, Sarah, you're in the wrong business to be thinking like that.
Because everything he says, Sarah says, Albert always has some wisdom.
He always
like
is providing
snarky,
me
like
wisdom.
Snarky little wisdom. Like, she'll say, man, there was so many snake tracks down there. It was crazy, Albert. You wouldn't believe all the snake tracks we've seen today. And you know the thing about the snake tracks, Sarah? You can't tell which way they're going.
He would tell me this stuff all the time.
Albert is cool.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
His sense of humor is so hidden.
Yes, I know.
You don't know if he's
just... We had a good time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, him and Sarah would just bust each other's balls all the time. He loved it. And we do shit to him like... He only eats all this healthy stuff at home, so he says, don't tell anybody I'm eating this. But we got some blueberry donuts and put them, you know... up on the shelf, he'd get one, and he'd eat one, and he'd take one with him for his lunch. And anyways, the box was gone, and I found one more in a box. I told Sarah, I says, look, I'm going to catch Albert. So I took that and stuck it up on the, like, a counter where he walked through, and he walked through there, and he stopped. I seen him stop and jolt.
He's right in his tracks.
Yeah, he stopped right in his tracks and grabbed that donut. He thought they were all gone. So I trapped the trapper.
Yeah, well, Albert totaled his truck on his way out to the ranch. Got in a wreck, totaled the truck, and he was stuck at the ranch. And we were obviously in Arkansas, so we couldn't get there.
Mm-hmm.
I told Jeff, I said, I'm just so worried about him. I said, I don't know what he's eating. I don't know if he needs to go to the store. I mean, I assume the ranch hands are taking care of him.
I'm sure they would, yeah.
But, you know, Jeff had a bad experience with ranch hands before where they just weren't nice people. And mm-hmm. I didn't know the situation. I was worried about Albert.
That's not a normal ranch you were on, by the way.
No.
Yeah, I said, we got to get there. We got to get to him and, you know, get him to town, make sure. Because he says he doesn't cook. I thought, great.
No, he eats like yogurt and fruit and.
I said, great. Me and Jeff can't cook either. So we're going to be in a hot mess of a thing. Anyway, he says, don't worry about me. I have heat 'em and eat 'ems. I didn't know what that meant. And I get there. He says, see, I got lots of heat 'em and eat 'ems. There's canned chili, canned vegetable soup, and canned venison, beef, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Three things. They're all canned. I looked at Jeff and I said, I'm not. That's very old school. I don't know about eating any of that.
Oh, this is what he canned.
This is what his wife canned and what he was sent to camp with. So he, because he doesn't cook.
Mm-hmm.
That's obviously why he didn't need any groceries or anything, and so I didn't need to be worried.
Out to dinner at the Dairy Queen. And
I said, I'm not eating that. So I said, it just looked weird, you know. And so I cooked for like the first solid week, and then I got sick of cooking, and Albert says, let's just eat the Heat 'em and Eat 'ems. And so we did, and it was so good.
They were awesome. They were awesome. So good. His wife did a good job.
I didn't cook the rest of the time. No, we ate his canned food.
He still had some. We took some cans off of him when he left.
Yeah.
Did he have to buy a new truck down there?
Yeah, yep. So then I had to take him. Because, you know, he's not good with technology or his phone right. or anything. So I looked up a dealership.
And he's so particular on that he wanted. His main selling point was on this new truck, it had to have black rims. I mean,
black rims.
Black rims. That was like one of the biggest selling points, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It had to match the truck. You want a black truck with black rims. And the one ranch hand who you'd know, he says, you know, Albert, even though that truck is a $80,000 truck, when you go to town, you ain't getting no women with it. Or just laughed.
Yeah, we got him a new truck, got him in wheels, and
you know, if I'm not mistaken, one of the trips to Lambendary years ago, he had to go get a new truck then.
Really?
I think so.
He didn't tell me that story.
Or he got it right before he left or something.
Well, he was...
Dodge. He got a Dodge, didn't he?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
He was going, turning left, and he had that 24-foot trailer of his, and the girl went to pass him and T-boned him right in the gas tank area.
Mm.
And they finally, after 2.5 weeks, they finally totaled it out. Well, I guess it had been more than that. It had been almost a month they totaled it out.
So could he drive it to the ranch?
No. No.
How did he get to the ranch?
The ranch hand had to come and get his trailer. And then when he went home, he had a blowout on his trailer, got over by Louisiana and had a blowout, and he changed that one. Then he had another blowout right after that, and his axle was bent from the accident. I don't know how he made it that far, but
good grief!
But he hauls enough stuff in there for like a small army.
Yeah, he does. He's never learned that lesson.
But that's the thing is you know, it's like with the. That's what's nice about if, say, like he was more into the technology part of it. You know, if you broke down on, what is it, on southern Louisiana, U.S., is it 20?
10.
10.
Yeah.
If you broke down on 10 anywhere down there and you put out a thing like online, somebody will come help you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Albert doesn't know any. I mean, does he have a smart? I think he still has a foot bone, don't he?
No, he had a smartphone.
He had a smartphone, but he's not very smart using it. You know, but. And, like, most of the stuff he got on his new truck, he'll never, ever figure out how to use most of that stuff. Sarah rode with him all the way to North Texas just to show him how to use different things.
And I was scared to leave him.
Yeah.
I felt so bad.
Oh, I can't say anything. I can't figure out Cindy's car. I can't even turn up the air in that thing.
Well, you can't turn the heat off on your own, so... Remember we were coming down the road, and I told you, man, is it hot in the south in the summertime? I mean, I'm just, like, burning up. We got the hood off the Jeep, and, I mean, it's boiling hot. And Quinn said, oh, shit, I forgot to turn the heater off. He had the heater on full blast.
So your snares, what describe your snares to me that you're using, or did Albert supply those?
Albert initially had set the fence up for us, and then we had purchased snares from Razorback Snares from Liz and Carl. And so whatever their magic that they do on their snares, they were already, spray painted them for us, so they were camouflaged in, they were already loaded. A short pigtail clipped to the fence.
The pigtail on them was really nice because you could reach the next, you know, thing.
Yeah, and that was different. Like Albert's snares versus ours, he had a longer pigtail on there, which gave the animal a lot more room to flip around and jump around. Where the short one, you know, they were they were right there. They mm-hmm. didn't. They weren't tearing up a bunch of stuff.
You they, know, weren't they were in and right out and of compact. The fence, tangled up, you know, hanging from the fence.
Yeah, they weren't able to crawl up or down or whatever. So I really liked that.
Mine were very short, but and I started off like Albert because mm-hmm. I thought that's what. But it was hard. You never saw coyotes chew the snare if they were really short.
Right.
It was because they'd come back through the fence, and now it's hitting them in the face, mm-hmm. and it's right there. Mm-hmm. So when I got to the short stuff, a lot of that went away. You just learn that. Just learn it over time if you pay attention.
Yeah, I mean, we were trying everything, you know, as far as the you know, how close to the fence do you put the snare? Is it, you know, right up on the fence? Is half of the snare over the fence? If it's too short, is, mm-hmm. you know, do you do off-center? Do you center it up? Do you add any guiding steps? How do you block it in? I mean, man, I was just thinking, like,
mm-hmm.
you think it's so easy. Hang the snare. Mm-hmm. And then you get doing it, and then there's, you know, similar to like when we were trapping otter and you put trail cameras on things, it's amazing what you miss and how much more you can learn. So
I think it'd be cool to put trail cams and leave a couple of those holes open just to see what comes through there.
Definitely. We need to, I want some more footage of those crawl unders.
Yeah.
To see.
There's a lot of room for improvement on
that. A lot. Yep.
I mean, the biggest thing, and I remember telling Carl this when he started doing high fence, wherever he was doing that at. It wasn't Texas.
Arkansas.
If it looks like a crawl under and it's 3 inches, set it. That's where I caught most of my cats, were those little bitty ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we caught a lot too. You know, Albert had, like I said, he had set it up. And then we'd go back through, and it's amazing, even after we have drove by those day after day, how much you miss. You mm-hmm. know, you've missed a bunch of crawl unders, mm-hmm. and then so we'd go back through and we'd set things that Albert had missed. And I said, Albert, I said, you know, I said, how, you didn't set that one. He says, nothing's coming through there. And, you know, we'd set it and we'd, you know, you catch something, mm-hmm. and they don't look like the ideal crawl under, but. So yeah, we went back through and we set everything we possibly could set.
Did y'all ever go down in those big gullies up towards the main road?
Yep.
Walk all the way down to the bottom?
Yep.
See, I never had much luck with coyotes or cats down there, but it was coon everywhere.
Yeah, we caught quite a few coon
down there.
Not as many as what we'd think, but.
But, you know, you got to be careful with the.
It was warming up and that would look like a snaky place to me.
It was. And what time of year was it y'all were down there?
February.
We got down there the first two weeks of February. Because we were in Arkansas the first two weeks.
Through the first week of March.
Yeah.
So when you were there, what types of sets did you do you remember what type of sets that was your go-to foothold sets?
You mean in the last century when I was down
there?
Yeah. Footholds mostly were, towards the end, it was a lot of portable pockets, a ton. But I would always, if I could find grass, I'd always collect it as I went by it. So I could just do like the little grass ball mm-hmm. over the portable pocket. And that did very well. Big dirt holes did good. Little dirt holes did not do me good. Nowhere in Texas did I do very good with that. But you were saying that someone's going to the Leggett set down there and killing them.
Mm-hmm.
So it just because someone doesn't have luck doesn't mean that you won't. And I do a ton of flat sets.
Yep.
Just very crude. The sets blended in good, but it's just mm-hmm. where I think they're going to be. The biggest thing that I remember that helped me with footholds is where you have those drainages and you have the road that crosses the mm-hmm. drainage.
Mm-hmm.
When I sat on the road, I'd catch coons and cats, but I didn't catch that many coyotes there hardly ever.
Mm-hmm.
What I finally figured out, if they're spooky, which most of them are after you've been there for a while, I would go up the thing on the trail because you can see the trail where everything's mm-hmm. running, and I would set a flat set or something 10 or 15 feet off the road, and then you start picking up coyotes. Because
mm-hmm.
it was almost like the coyotes knew when they were in that open road coming from that cover, every ranch hand down there with a, you know, 25-06 or whatever is going to be shooting at them.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't stop. So, I mean, with all the students, I saw some very elaborate stuff being made. But simple always seemed to do better down there.
Mm-hmm.
The more elaborate you made it, the more nervous they seemed to get.
Yeah, that seems about the same way.
So what was new for us with making sets was it got up into the 90s. At some days it was 90-plus degrees, heat index over 100. As far as the baits, it was different for us because we never trapped in that kind of heat with the baits. So, you know, we used a lot of the liquid bait, and that seemed to do really well, you know. But otherwise, the bait, you know, dried up, and it was a balancing act.
Fire ants, you know, you'd put something down the hole, and they'd be go marching off with it, you know, with that liquid they couldn't pull out.
Well, that's where the liquid claymore's at, too.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where that started coming from. It's because of the ants.
Because
when I was trapping in different places like Georgia, I mean, you put a solid bait down, it's not even there the next day.
No.
And then they would start an anthill in the hole. Yeah, the liquid. Did y'all feel like some of the lures and baits are drying out too quick?
Sometimes I felt that way, but then, you know, they still had some smell to them, so... You know, it was experimental for me to try to go through that, but
I thought they held up good. They, I mean, they'd look, you know, reach down in there, pull them out, and they, you know, it would look dry, but then when you smelled them,
it had
exactly what you wanted. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I played around with all kind of things, which I'm not going to say here, but I can tell you later that seemed to help. But it was. Some of the stuff didn't do very well, and then you kind of figured it out, which you did and didn't use.
Mm-hmm.
But that pipe set you were talking about, that was, or the portable pocket thing, that was the metal, it's a metal pipe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you could then put that down in the ground, and that kind of protected it from...
It did.
From a little bit.
It did, especially with the grass around it.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, for the cats, I wouldn't have to, but Cat Collector, the dry never seemed to bother it. Mm-hmm. So,
but yeah,
for the coyote stuff, I definitely had to protect it the best I could, especially with bait.
Yeah.
It's definitely interesting down there. Yeah, I mean, it's really not, you know, it's like totally different if you're trapping in Michigan or Wisconsin or anything. Down in South Texas, it's a whole different ball game.
See, I still think that's where the coyote championship should be,
yeah.
South Texas.
Yeah.
There'd be a lot of heartbroken egos happening after that. Footholds only.
Yeah.
Well, then you really create a problem.
So what type of sets did y'all depend on?
Man, we were trying everything.
Yeah, we threw everything.
And used... Albert still had some of your turkey feathers, your whole setup thing with the pipe and then the other angle thing and then the wind spinner, the fishing spinner thing.
We took one of them,
and
your old ones he had down there, and we got it hanging in Sarah's office at home. It's hanging up there, and when the door opens, it spins with the turkey feather.
Those were so cool. What's the story?
Well, when you have the best place to put a cat trap and there's nothing in the correct place to put the flag, I'm like, I need something to put the flag on. And trying to stick sticks in that ground down there does not work. Yeah. So we started piddling around with that. So that's what we come up with.
I loved it.
I mean, we've tried. I went down there with like these little kite birds one time. I thought that was going to be the ticket. Everything's got thorns, shredded every single one of them the first night. Because the wind during the day down there is calm. It picks up at night. So what you think is safe, you come back and you're I bet I spent $400 on these little bird things. I lost every one of them in 24 hours.
Well, the first thing Albert wanted to know was if we were planning on sticking any teddy bears in his traps. That was the first thing, because he said he wasn't putting up with it.
Did y'all?
No.
A bunch of wusses. It was an Easter bunny.
Yeah.
It was Easter. If you call it Easter bunny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was not happy.
No.
No, I can see that would not make him happy.
Because in his mind, he missed the biggest cat he was going to catch the whole trip because I did that. He don't know I did that like 40 minutes before he got there. But.
I would have to say that he's probably one of the most, when you're trapping with him or around him, still like one of the, you know, usually if you're trapping with somebody, you see everything they're doing, they see everything. He's still secretive.
Mm-hmm. He is. He wants to know what you're doing.
But he'll take Sarah off and show Sarah stuff, but then don't want
me to know.
He
showed me all his sets.
Yeah, but then don't want me to know. You know?
Jeff couldn't know. Yeah. And I couldn't take any pictures. I definitely couldn't video anything. And I couldn't even talk about him.
Is he still using those nails?
Yep, he showed me the nails. Because in my mind, and I'm sure there's people listening to this podcast, how do you nail a trap down without it firing? I mean, I just could not get it in my head of how do you use the nail to bed this thing and still allow the jaws to fire.
Well, back in the 80s or late 70s, there was a book come out called Power Bedding, mm-hmm. and they were like little wooden pieces that people sold. And all he did was just transfer that over to the gutter nails.
Yep.
But I don't know why he uses such big ones.
They were gigantic.
Spikes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, he used that. Definitely made a difference because the spot that, and me and him put a set in together, and that was pretty cool. But that particular spot, like we were talking about the lava type ground, when mm-hmm. it just comes out in big chunks.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to sift anything back over mm-hmm. it, and there's no way to get it level or to get that bed solid. We use the nails in that, and that helped tremendously.
Well, what I used to do is carry at least 2 5-gallon buckets, and when I came across one of the drainages with the sand,
mm-hmm.
I would fill those up and use them and try to keep them
mm-hmm.
so I didn't have to deal with that very much.
Yep.
But still, sand is hard to bed in, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, his system down there is pretty slick.
Yeah.
I was carrying so much crap, I couldn't imagine bringing... how many nails do you think he takes down there?
Well, he doesn't... He didn't have enough time because he'd been doing it by himself. So all of his time was running the fence.
Okay.
And so he didn't have time to set any footholds. And then, you know, he set...
He was frazzled by the time we got there. He said that we were a godsend.
How old is Albert now? He's in his 70s, isn't he?
He's close to 80. He's 78.
And he would still outwork all three of us.
Absolutely.
But he can't go fast. In his Kubota. him and his Kubota and us and our side by side, we can definitely beat him.
I think it's top speed at like 25 miles an
downhill.
Hour.
Downhill.
And he's so funny. I mean, I got in with him and he has the door open and he hops in and pedal to the metal. He doesn't even shut the door. He says, I don't have time to shut the door. It'll shut. And I mean, so he's got both hands on the steering wheel, pedal to the metal, and then the door shuts.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, Albert.
And he was saying he kept his shirt on this time.
Yeah,
for several years, I could never keep a shirt on him. He had a big hat on, 357 Magnum hanging off, just sunburnt. Scared the people that worked at the ranch to death.
All these people, he's awesome. I mean, because he is an awesome guy, but...
And he's honest. That's the thing.
That's the main thing with down there is that he's honest and they trust him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why we're on that ranch is, you know, because Albert's built a relationship with them and they trust him. Mr. Albert is honest and, you know, the one guy, when he's going to bring us in, Albert asked him, you know, he said, I really like need these guys' help. He said, we trust you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you give them the keys to your house... to your front door, by all means, bring them in. If you wouldn't, then don't. So, but yeah, we you know, talked to them and realized that, you know, the trappers they had in there were off, you know, picking arrowheads and stealing mm-hmm. their arrowheads and taking sheds.
Sheds, you know, that's a big one.
You know, and so, I mean, we went there and just did what we were supposed to do, and, you know, it all worked out. Right before we left, they come over and told us, you're welcome back anytime.
So. Yep. They still have the skin and shed up on the hill?
Yep. Yeah, they still got that, and they got the walk-in cooler and the walk-in freezer.
The cool thing about that property is you don't have the illegal issue like we did on the border. Mm. So you don't have to worry about that as much.
No.
Because it was nothing more frustrating resetting 30 traps a day because the illegals are stepping
up. I think a pretty good handle on it. I don't know how they got surveillance or what they have, but because they have the water in there where they, you know, with the valves, and they say that's where them illegals go to, is right to them water valves and open them up. And then he says it would be one thing if they got a drink out of it and then turned it off, but they said they never will turn it off. They just let it run.
Mm.
You know, so, you know, basically that's why they go out there hunting them down.
Well, the first time I tried 330s in the fence, it was close to the border, and I woke up at like 2 o'clock in the morning going, if I catch one of them in that, I'm probably going to prison. I couldn't sleep for the rest of the night. I got up and went and set them off. When I set them, it never entered my mind. Something in my brain in the middle of the night was like, that's big enough, because they're crawling under yep. those big crawl-unders. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't know what that was.
No. We were talking to Mitchell Simpson. He said that he has where he can, because he's closer to the border on the other side. And he said that they'll be walking down the road, stepping his traps, not springing them on purpose, but just, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He's like blindsetting them mm-hmm. with footholds. And
well, you get 40 people going down one of them little bitty roads, they're firing something off.
If you had like a number 5 double long spring, Bridger there, they would be there.
I'm not sure you should have said that.
Luckily, we don't set those.
Well, I never caught any in the CDRs.
No.
So what are y'all going to do different this year than last year?
We're going to have multiple hammers, multiple drivers.
Multiple hammers and multiple drivers.
Equipment breaks down there.
Yes.
Multiple sifters.
Yes.
The sifters broke?
Wire comes out of them.
Mm.
They were the cheaper ones.
We will have leather gloves, kneeling pads.
Did y'all have snake boots?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wore those religiously.
Yeah, people online are laughing. So funny you got snake boots on. I'm like, we just seen a rattlesnake. I don't know how long it was, but... And they don't have any anti-venom on this ranch. So, yeah, I'm wearing snake boots.
I wore them.
Yeah, I don't care.
You're a fool not to.
I'm a Yankee. I wasn't raised around snakes, and I don't want to get bit. And if this helps me not get bit, that's the way I'm going.
Well, I had one time strike the four-wheeler as I was going down a trail. That made me realize maybe the boots aren't tall enough. Because
mm-hmm.
it hit behind my seat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it sensed the vibration and the heat.
Mm-hmm. But definitely taking different equipment and more equipment as far as drivers and stuff like that. Definitely more saber-tooth drags.
Are y'all using mostly coil springs?
All coil springs except for a couple long springs. You know, like, we got a couple new houses we always take with us, you know, just as a, it's a cool thing to set.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Texas is the reason I got into the long spring so much.
Mm-hmm.
When I got into sandy ground, I got so frustrated with the coal springs.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get in the ground you're talking about, it comes up in chunks, then you're cussing the long springs.
Mm-hmm. But no, yeah, that's the plan as of now, just haul more drivers, sifters, hammers. We were down to, what, one hammer last year? It's one of them orange hammers. I was beating on, thinking the head goes flying off. I was like, I never broke one of these hammers before. You could put the head back on it and get about three hits, and then the hammer would fall off. And, you know, the head would fall off again. And
then we had, you had...
Borrowed one from Alan.
Borrowed one from Alan, and it was a little baby hammer, a little tiny little thing.
You had to hit them stakes like 27,000 times. Just
I always use just the like 24-ounce claw hammers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was what Elber had. I don't know. He had a whole trailer load of stuff. He had enough stuff he never ever really had to leave.
No.
Like, I'm surprised he didn't have an extra axle in the back of the trailer for
that
the trailer.
That was about the only thing he didn't have in there. Because he's loading this stuff up, and he's going slow motion. And tell him what you said about...
He likes to piddle, mm-hmm. just tinker. Like, it's loading day. Well, it was a difference. You know, he'd been doing it by himself, and he's much older, and we're like a week... 5-6 days out from leaving, and he's talking about poling. And I said, you know, we got lots of time. Mm-hmm. Oh no, we got to get pulled. We got to get loaded. Well, me and Jeff, I mean, we can load and unload for a living. Mm-hmm. We can load the stuff up. And so I said, no, I said, I want to trap a couple more days. I said, we'll pull the line together. And he's out there. Now it's like load day. We're basically 99% loaded, and Albert is maybe 2% loaded,
mm-hmm.
and he's tinkering. And it's like 75 degrees, 8 o'clock in the morning, pull up my phone, and it's going to be 90 degrees in a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Albert, we got to move. I mean, we got to cram and jam. We got to go.
He doesn't cram and jam.
He didn't move much faster than he's...
But he can do that for like 48 hours straight.
He can. Yeah, he can consistently, you know, move at that pace. And so I said, Albert, we got to go. I said, where do you want this? Where do you want this? He says, well, at this point, I guess I can't be picky about where I want it. I said, that's what I'm talking about. We are loading.
Could you imagine if he was here the day y'all loaded up all the crap out of my shop? With all those trailers looked like?
He'd have still been here doing it.
He'd have still been looking.
I don't know how one of y'all didn't die when y'all opened the door on one of those trailers.
Yeah.
It was like Tetris in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially the one Alan took out.
We're still going through it. We still don't know what some of it is. We have a whole half of the building, Clint's stuff, Clint's weirdo stuff.
So tell me about New York. Why are y'all going to New York?
We are going fisher trapping. I've never caught a fisher. I'm so excited. So Chappie and his wife invited us out to the Catskills.
You've caught a fisher before, though, huh?
Yeah, I've caught them quite a few. But I've never been anywhere where it was, like, unlimited and you can, you know, catch them about as hard as you want to go. So, they're probably probably are my favorite fur, so. But Chappie's putting all the boxes, he's got all his boxes out from years and years ago, and he says.
Do you know what traps he's putting in them?
I think he's got some, I don't know exactly. I think the ones on the poles, he's got some 160s because they have to be legal to be on the poles. But then he's got 155s on the ground in an enclosed box or something.
I'm sure in New York there's some.
Yeah.
Did you say, man, you got weirdo rules?
Mm-hmm.
Weirdo rules.
Yeah. We'll have to do an interview with Chappie about just prepping because he's got his waypoints marked on the on his Onyx. He already knows when we get there if it's a body grip, if it's a foothold, what type of set we're making. He's already dug out some tree trunks, but he's scouted everything, and he's got some.
He's a good guy to go with because, I mean, he's always got a positive attitude, and he's got a
worker. That's important.
Donald works for him, and then Mike, and, Mike's going to be the our competition. He's going to run his own fishers. He's not going with us, Jappy, and Donald.
So, praying every day he beats you.
He
already knows.
He said, I'll probably catch more possums. And I'm like, you probably will. It's all going to be fun. And there's another, Tucker Farber's up there, and, he traps that area. And so it'll be fun with a lot of, people we're friends with.
And so Tucker's wife and Wendy hasn't never sewed fur before, and I barely know how to sew fur. But we're scheduling a fur sewing night for the three of us ladies just to make.
That's
fur.
What you need is more stuff to get into, girl.
I know. I sewed a little bit. I've sewed just a little bit of things. Yeah, I made some
pillows.
Everything
she's made, she sold.
Yep. My first pillow I made, I sold this summer.
I need the $50.
Yep. So, yeah. But I'm really excited about that. They've never sewed.
It's fun out there. I'm taking my metal detector out there because I got a lot of history, so... And plus, they have unlimited cats, unlimited otter. Well, not them when we're there because it's water season ain't open, but it's just going to be a fun trip. It's everybody else always, including us, heads west, southwest. You don't really hear of anybody, going on a 2-week trapping trip to New York. Mm-hmm. So thought it'd be something a little bit different and get to go hang out with friends and. Yeah, we sell lures and stuff to a lot of people in New York, so.
The weather should be beautiful up there that time of year.
Yeah.
And then in return, Chappie's coming to Iowa to run some Iowa raccoon line. So we're riding back with him, and then we'll set up Iowa line real quick. Well, he'll be on his way to Wyoming and deer hunting and Nebraska and, but so he'll get to experience some Iowa.
Yeah, so we'll ride back with him from New York on his way from back to Wyoming, and we'll just stay in Iowa and run that coon line for 2 or 3 days. And
however long he wants to stay.
Yeah. 4 or 5 days, whatever.
Well, have you ever figured the coyotes out in Iowa yet?
I could go out and catch quite a few. I always get the short end of the stick on the coyotes.
Why is that?
Well, in Michigan, it's always October 15th it opens, and I'm gung-ho on going out and catching coyotes. Well, you can't catch a lot of them in Michigan.
No.
But make a good effort. And then November 1st,
you work really hard.
Yeah, and drive a lot of miles.
You get a lot of practice putting in good sets.
Absolutely.
It's training.
Yeah, and nap time, in between the drive. Jeff drives me around. But then November 1st, water hits, so I only get 2 weeks. And then it's all about the water trapping.
Mm.
So then, it gets pulled. And then we go to Iowa, and usually we have, Haggerty's there, Nick Ernie comes, whatever, and they're solely focused on catching raccoons that, they don't want to go set coyote traps, and they don't want to go in any field. So it gets shorted on that, and then, back to Michigan and
We seen this last year some spots where them coyotes are running down certain trails, and so we're gonna set up some coyote sets this year because we only set up one last year and caught one coyote in it. We just seen when you see something, and then you try and use it to your advantage, and that's kind of what we're doing.
So we made blind sets with footholds in the ditches in Iowa and caught a coyote. We only saw one, got one coyote. So.
But we've seen lots of them type places, where them we think the coyotes are running down. So.
Do a little bit more of that.
It's always fun when you try and figure something out like that.
Do you remember the second time we met?
Mm-hmm.
It was at Hardee's. I was with Alan.
Yeah.
you wanted to go look at some property. Yeah. I met you at some shows.
Yeah.
She showed up with maps, with drawings, with notes. Mm-hmm.
Pictures.
When she sat down at the table, yeah, it was like we were sitting at World War II D-Day. I was like, who is this person? She's
still lying. I was trying to figure it out. Oh, my. I had screenshotted.
I remember
the whole thing. I had screenshotted, like, an overview area of the property, and then I had pictures of the set I made, and then I have pictures of every miss that happened at that set.
Yes, I remember all those.
Like, why did they dig this out this way? The track is here, and I had X's where I had the pan.
Oh, I remember.
Man, I thought if I was meeting with you, I was going to be prepared to pick your brain for hours on everything.
You probably never had anybody do anything like that. She's still that same way.
I knew she was serious or crazy. One of the two.
Well, a little of both.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, see, here's an idea for you. If you want to go guy trapping in Iowa and everybody wants to go catch raccoons, take those brown eyes, flutter them at him, and I bet he'll take you coyote trapping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. And we got the permissions, and now we have the four-wheeler down there. Yep. Because it is a lot. You know, you got the farm grounds you can't drive on when mm-hmm. they get bad weather, so you do have to have some sort of backup plan on getting in the field. So we should have no obstacles this year.
What do the coyotes look like in Iowa? Are they decent?
They're beauty queens.
They look like shit when you catch them, but when you tan them, I was like, I can't believe how awesome.
Jeff is like,
I told her we should throw every one of these.
Yep,
throw them in the ditch.
They're not good. They're not good.
We got them back. I'm like, I think they gave us the wrong kind. That's why the.
Are you trying to judge them all off of Michigan coyotes?
No, just what they were, but they just didn't look good. And once they got tanned, man, those things had white bellies, and you know, they're pretty really nice.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me warn you one thing that will happen to you in Texas. If y'all start going, spending a lot of time down there.
That's never going to happen to me.
You know what I'm getting ready to say?
I know exactly what you're getting ready to say.
After like a month, you're going to start saying, these coyotes don't look that bad.
Yeah, no.
And then they really still do, but you're just used to them.
Yeah. That's what I used to say when I thought in Iowa or Louisiana, I'd say, well, these coon don't really look that bad. And I'd be like, that was what I used to say. It was time to go home. I'd been there for 2 or 2.5 months. These raccoons starts looking good. Yeah, it's time to go home.
A little 27-inch coon.
Yep. No, I made a lot of money out of them 2012-13, but That was it.
Was there anything else y'all can think of?
No, just looking forward to trapping season, getting this last. We got one more convention at the Tennessee show to do, and then we're free and clear.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be flying out to New York for approximately 10 days to 2 weeks, and chasing fishers. And we're talking about going, I keep saying about going bobcat trapping out there. Sarah says, I don't think we're going to have time. We're going to be trapping fishers. I'm like, I'm going bobcat trapping.
Well.
Same type of set, but.
If y'all want to ever hear me do another trapping radio, y'all have to convince Jeff and Sarah to come down and see me every year.
Yeah.
We're making an annual thing, so.
Mm-hmm. And you're always welcome wherever we are.
I've got to figure out that Michigan license thing.
Buy it now. Yep.
And every time I come up there, there's this nasty stuff called snow.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the one time you brought Cindy's truck up and you were bringing a load to F&T. And there's this road called the Hubbard Lake Trail. Old grade. And
I was just following the GPS.
It's slippery. Nobody would go down through there, and her truck's only two-wheel drive.
With an aluminum bed.
With aluminum bed, and he's like, I hear him say, I'm just turning on the Hubbard Lake Trail. Roads are really bad. Click, he's gone. And I know there's no signal for 12 miles through there.
I don't know
how. This might be the last time I ever talk to him. Because, I mean, there's some cedar swamps where you drop, you know, 20 feet down in.
You know what I did at those? Hit the gas. I didn't touch my brakes on that 12 miles, and every time I knew that if I was going down, there had to be an up, and I knew I had to get speed. It was rough.
Yeah.
I was a wreck when I finally hit concrete again. Well.
All right. Well, thanks for sitting down with us. Thanks for doing the interview. Good to hear your voice on here again.
Awesome.
Yep.
And Jeff just waved, since y'all can't see it.
No, I waved. All right. Well, we'll see you guys next week.
See ya.